Good evening. Good evening, yes. Hello and welcome to this final session today. It's been a long day, hasn't it? So hopefully this will be a little bit entertaining. And the title of this talk is different from the title you see right here. First of all, because the title of the talk was so long that it didn't fit the slide. So that's one reason. The other reason is that this is actually the title. So I'm not going to go through step by step how to build an app using Angular and Bootstrap and those sort of things. There is a talk tomorrow morning by the talented and always entertaining John Papa where he's going to do exactly that, where he's going to take it step by step, ASP.NET and Angular, and building an app there. So that's the other talk, okay? So a little bit of confusion. Instead, what I want to talk about is very related, but more about where we are today on the ASP.NET and Visual Studio web team, and where we're going tomorrow and in the future. Some of it in the near future, some of it in like a far out future. And I brought some prototypes, some brand new prototypes that no one have seen before. So you're going to be the first. And prototypes, they're almost not prototypes, they're proof of concepts, they're that new. And so that's going to be really cool. My name is Mats Christensen, and I'm a program manager on the web tools team and ASP.NET team. But what I do is I build all the web tooling that goes into Visual Studio. Not so much the ASP.NET framework itself. But what I want to start with is to take a look at some of our ideals, because I don't think we've really talked too much about this. And with the announcements that came out yesterday, with the new version of ASP.NET, I think it's about time that we kind of look at what is it that we're doing. What are the guiding principles and the guiding star that we're moving toward? So one of them is that we very strongly believe in web standards. You probably remember not that long ago, IE6 was not necessarily a good poster child for web standards, to say the least. But over the past couple of years, and those of you on Visual Studio 2012 and 2013, you probably noticed that we're serious and we mean business when it comes to web standards. All we do is web standards. Right? This is absolutely clear. There's nothing we're going to do that's going to violate any web standards. That's very important to us. Open source is also very important to us. You saw how we just released the entire ASP.NET stack on GitHub, all open source. That's the first step. We want to open source everything. We think it's a good thing to open source as much as we can, just for the sake of open sourcing it. Like, we don't need any other reason that open source is great. But there are a lot of benefits, and this is something we strongly believe in. Cross-platform development, another thing. So, traditionally, we've not been known for cross-platform development efforts. We are aware of this. Nonetheless, it is where we want to be. It is a goal. We want to be in a place where you can have a team member sitting on a Mac in Sublime Text writing ASP.NET code and another team member on Windows in Visual Studio working on the same project without any problems. You can host it on Windows, you can host it on the Mac, you can host it on Linux, and everything just works seamlessly together. This is a big thing, and it's not a Microsoft issue in the past that it has been difficult to do cross-platform. It's actually been a problem for a lot of the other technologies out there. There are small hiccups here and there. It's not a seamless experience, but that's what we believe that we should ensure, that we get a completely seamless experience cross-platform for both hosting and development and whatever else you might think about. This is a new one you might not have heard before. Whatever tools make you happy when you develop, those tools you should use those tools, and we think that's great, right? Maybe you thought about this in the past, saying, well, Microsoft have Visual Studio, so that's the one thing, and we're going to force people into Visual Studio if they're going to do any .NET development or any ASP.NET or web development. That is not the case. That is not where we want to be. This should be completely open. If you want to use any other tools, if you prefer to sit in Sublime Text or Vim or TextMate or WebStorm or whatever it might be, and you want to build your build process running on Grunt and Node.js, That's fine. That's perfectly fine. If that makes you happy, then that's perfectly fine with us. And we want to make sure that you still get a great experience if you want to mix and match. So you still want to use Visual Studio, but you also want to use your command line tools and some of your Node task runners like Grunt and Gulp and all these sort of things. We still want that to be a great experience. So we don't believe in locking you into Visual Studio. That is not what we want. Whatever makes you happy makes us happy. And then this is a little bit of a confused topic, client versus server in the browser. Because a lot of people, they're moving completely over to static client-side HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And through Ajax, just call a web API, whatever that may be written in, but keep their entire website completely static. We do not believe that is the right way to go. The server and the client mixing Razor, for instance, with HTML is much better. This is something we strongly believe in. I'm going to have some demos that sort of drives home that point. But this is the way we're going. We're not abandoning the server stack or anything like that, saying, yeah, well, if you want to do Node or whatever, that's fine. No. Server and client together is the best experience, both for development and for the end user. And then it's just too hard. Like 10 years ago, to build a website was very easy. You load a Dreamweaver up, or maybe my old and still my favorite HTML editor, HomeSite. Any HomeSite fans here? Yes. All right. So that's just for the old people like me in the room. That's like a 1990s thing, I think. Anyway, whatever tool that you have, back then you would just build some HTML, throw some tables in there, do a little style sheet, and then you would go to dynamicdrive.com to get some JavaScript that would make things spin around or whatever. It was easy. Now today, we have HTML5, we have all the JavaScript APIs. We literally have an operating system in the browser that we have to code against to get all the cool features. So the complexity has just gone up. It is not simple anymore because there's so much more that we have to be aware of as web developers. But not only that, every week there's a new framework or library coming out that we have to somehow know about. If we don't know about some of this stuff, how can we ensure that we're most productive, that we use the right tool or framework for the right job and so on? This is not easy. So we very strongly believe that it should be easier. Like if you want to build an Angular app, for instance, a single-page application using AngularJS or Ember or whatever your weapon of choice is, there is a steep learning curve. There is you go straight into a high-complex situation. So we want to bring that down to where the entry to doing that complex stuff becomes a lot easier. I hope you agree with that. And finally, we very, very strongly believe in ASP.NET and C Sharp. This is not going anywhere. There's been a little bit of confusion around this because, well, Azure now supports Java and Node and PHP and all that, so what about ASP.NET? We haven't been talking that much of .NET on the server for a while, and that's a mistake on our part because this is not going anywhere. We actually have more people now dedicated on the core of ASP.NET than we've had in a long, long time. We're very serious about this. So C Sharp and ASP.NET is today and in the future still going to be the main components of our web stack. So don't worry about that. All right. So we have a few goals. So if we look at the framework side first, remember the one ASP.NET that we introduced in Visual Studio 2013? File new project. There was only one ASP.NET project. That was the first step toward one ASP.NET. But we want to make everything only have one of everything. So dependency injection, routing, caching, there's been different mechanisms, whether you used Web API or MVC and web forms, they were all a little bit different. So with the stuff we announced yesterday, we actually now have a combined stack, so we only have one of each of these components. But there are more, and we want to make that super seamless, and it doesn't matter what technology you use, what framework you use on top of ASP.NET, this should be law. There's only one of each. And the stuff that you saw yesterday with the ASP.NET vNext, you can easily replace any parts of your app, any of our stuff, with your own stuff or someone else's stuff. All right, so every piece of the pipeline can actually be replaced by whatever you want it to be. You don't like the yellow screen of death? Well, add your own that gives you more detail, that looks prettier or whatever. Right, all this sort of stuff you can do. 100% open source. So we're there when it comes to framework. We're getting there. We want everything to be open source. We don't have 100% yet. We still don't have the runtime and all the different kind of aspects of ASP.NET, but we want to get there. We've just taken a huge leap yesterday with the announcement, and hopefully in the near future or maybe even further out, we're going to have complete open source everything. And we're going to take contributions. Two of the biggest features for MVC at the last release was contributed by the community. That's pretty cool. That's really cool, actually. We love that sort of stuff. You make us more productive. We don't have to write all the code. Awesome. But it is important because we can start doing decoupled releases. When everything is open source, when everything is sort of isolated, we can do decoupled releases. We don't have to wait for a full version of the .NET framework or Visual Studio to update single DLLs that does something specific. Like, we can update MVC or Web API or SignalR completely out of band at any rate we want to. And you can just opt in to getting the updates whenever you want to. So we can completely decouple the various different components, which is a huge benefit. And we're going to make sure that you can get, because of that, we can make sure that you get the updated bits faster if you want to. Hey, let me just mention this, by the way. If you have any questions, you know, raise your hand. There are a few mics here. You can go to the mics. I will leave a little bit of room afterwards. But raise your hand. I'll repeat the question if you can't find a mic. Just a little service announcement. No hands. Okay. Oh, there was one. Is there anything of the ASP.NET stack that will not be open source? What do I mean by 100% open source? I mean literally 100%. Everything that it takes to run and develop ASP.NET applications should be open source. That is the goal. We're not there yet. That is the goal. And I do mean everything. Yes. That's right there. So the question was, will you be able to run it on Mono? Yes. It's on the slide, so it must be true. Whether you develop on a Mac or on a Unix box, Linux box, you want to run it on Windows, you want to run your website on Mono, on Apache, or whatever, on Linux, you should do that. It should be the exact same experience, whether you run it on Windows or whether you run it on Linux or Mac. Right? We don't want to tie you in. If you're happy with your MacBook and you want to sit in OS X and have fun there, perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. That's the dream. And with yesterday's announcement, you actually saw ASP.NET running on a Mac. Right? So we're actually there right now. Yes, sir? What about Solaris support? I do actually not know. I don't know that. Sorry. I would assume that that's probably up here, too. Yeah. And finally, cloud optimized. This is sort of a weird concept, but think of it this way. The smaller the footprint becomes of an ASP.NET application, the higher density you can have on your servers. So whether or not that's on Azure or it's on your own server farms or whatever it is, smaller footprint is obviously better. So everything becomes an opt-in model. Right now, when you write a web forms app or an MVC app, we dump entire system web on you. So you're going to go through the entire request lifecycle, all this sort of things. We're setting up session modules, caching, all sorts of things that you might not need. By opting in explicitly to only the things you need, we can make the footprint a lot smaller and a lot faster as well. So everything is built on top of this Owen. And that gives us that side-by-side capability where you actually ship the runtime as part of your app. That means you can have on the server, you can have one website that runs on one version of ASP.NET and another website running on a different version. on the same machine. You don't have to call the sysadmin and say, hey, can you please update the ASP.NET framework or the .NET framework on Windows, or can you upgrade my Windows server from this version to the newest version? That doesn't matter anymore, because the runtime itself is in your app. So you just update it whenever you want to. That is really, really cool. IIS. Okay, so the question is, what about IIS? All of what we're doing with ASP.NET, also including the announcements from yesterday, all run on IIS and IIS Express. IIS Express is still the development server in Visual Studio and will be in the future, and full IIS is still the premier way of executing your ASP.NET app. It's just when you host ASP.NET on some other platform, whether that's self-host or in a console app or on a different platform, you're going to lose some management capabilities that only IIS can give you. So IIS, 100% of the way. Don't worry about that. Yes? How is Owen? How does it work? So, if it's specific to Windows or whatever. No, it is not. It's basically a standard layer that describes a pipeline. Open Web Interfaces for .NET. It's an open standard, and our implementation of that is called Katana. Okay, and it's basically just something that passes messages through a request pipeline. Okay, so there is nothing that binds it to any operating system or anything like that. All right, so that was framework. When it comes to tooling, and by tooling I mean Visual Studio web tooling. There's a little asterisk with that, actually. Bring your own tools. Hey, if you want to use Grunt and Bower and NPM, that's great. But if you use Visual Studio as well, we're going to give you an even better experience. How many people here knows about Grunt or Node.js? Okay. So you've seen that it's got a lot of uptake, and it's used for a lot of development purposes. Not necessarily runtime, but development purposes. And if you're going to do that, perfectly fine. Bring your own tools. That's what we want to do. I have a prototype of this I'm going to show you. This is a little bit abstract. A new project system. Today we have two project systems in Visual Studio for web. We have web application project, and we have website project. Only around 20% use website. Everyone else uses web application. That's when you say file new project, MVC, web forms, so on. But there's actually a file new website as well. And only 20% of you use that. We want to take the best of both project systems and build a brand new one. And that's going to really change how tooling works. This is the backbone of any project. There's a project system for a console app, for a WinForms app, for a WPF app, and so on. All of these types of apps have a unique project system. The one that we're building is going to be spectacular. It's going to be way more specific for web. When you add a file from Windows Explorer, or you do a TFS get latest or a pull from GitHub, you don't have to refresh the Solution Explorer anymore and say show all files and include in project, blah, 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 all that stuff. It's just going to show up. There's a lot of benefits with this. I just want to point it out because it's really important, but it's sort of a hidden thing. Now, what if all the tooling could be automated through command line? What if the tooling itself is command line executables that Visual Studio just calls into? That would allow us to say, if you want to sit on a Mac and you want to do MVC scaffolding, you can do that through the command line and get the exact same result as Visual Studio will give you. So that means other editors can also build stuff that just talks to our command line tools. And then, therefore, we can also spread. We can't install Visual Studio, right? We can't install Visual Studio on a Mac, for instance. But if we can take some of the web tooling and move it down to the command line, then we can. So that's going to be really, really interesting. So you see, the whole point here is whatever makes you happy, whatever OS you want to sit on, all this sort of stuff, it's all great. And we want to make it great. We're not there yet with the command line, but we will get there. We're actually working on that. And then we have Web Essentials. How many people here knows Web Essentials? Hands up. All right, that's like half the room. The other half you will go download it after I'm done here, I'm sure. Web Essentials is our free extension for Visual Studio. It's owned by the community. It's actually not a Microsoft extension. It has had more contributions from the community than anyone working at Microsoft has contributed. This is our playground. This is where we test new features. What's possible, what works, what doesn't work. It's the place where we can go in and say, we want to be on the very cutting edge of all the latest and greatest, and we can write it up in a weekend and submit it, and it will be part of Web Essentials, this free extension that has been downloaded, I don't know, over 1.3 million downloads so far. This is where we push the envelope and play around with new things. And whenever something is cool and we like it and everyone else seems to like it, we're going to graduate it up into Visual Studio. So by having Web Essentials, we can react really, really fast to any new things that's coming out, whether that's on the tooling side or it's in the frameworks, the JavaScript frameworks and CSS frameworks and so on. We can start playing around with tooling specific to different types of frameworks. And that's really, really cool. So that will continue to be our playground. We have absolutely no plans of discontinuing this for any other means. And again, this is 100% open source. And all of you are welcome to participate, by the way. So today, where does it leave us? So on the services and data side, nothing here changes. It's still Web API, Entity Framework, SignalR, Cloud Services, other services, REST APIs, and whatever that you talk to today. So nothing actually changes on that stack, even though that there have been re-implemented for the new version of ASP.NET. It's still the same stuff. It's still whatever you already know today. On the server side, we see Web Pages and MVC, both of them built with Razor, as the premier server-side presentation layer stack for rich client applications. Think about the apps that you're going to be building in the future, 2, 3, 5 years from now. All right. These are, in our view, the technologies on the server-side presentation layer. Web Pages is this sort of classic ASP.NET way of thinking about websites. It's still a Razor page, but it doesn't have a controller. It's very much like classic ASP, but you get the full benefit of the .NET framework. And then, of course, MVC, which most of you probably already know. So that gives us that granular control over the markup that we need for client-side applications and rich JavaScript. We need to have absolute control of the rendered output. These two technologies give you that, and it's a great experience. On the client side, Angular and Bootstrap. Those are the two. So we've been through, you know, Ember, Knockout, Durandal, Angular, all different kinds of things, but right now, it looks like Angular is going to win. And by winning, I just mean it's the one that's probably going to be the most popular. It already is. And that trend seems to continue. It's still not at the level that it was a few years ago with jQuery. Remember 5 years ago, jQuery, there was MooTools, Dojo Toolkit, Prototype, and a lot of other libraries. And at the end, jQuery won. They just absolutely won, right? And we ship jQuery, and we've done since Visual Studio 2010, in the box. You can actually call Microsoft support if you have problems with jQuery. Do you know that? Kind of funny. Angular's not there yet, but it might be. So what we want to do is say, okay, we want to make all JavaScript modern app technologies lift everything up to a super high level where it's so easy to build, it's such a rich experience. But then for Angular, we want to take it a little bit further. All right, we're going to single Angular out a little bit and do specific tooling just for Angular. Bootstrap is the same thing. It's not a clear winner. The majority of users are moving to Bootstrap, but there are other things like SERP Foundation and other frameworks out there. But we're going with Bootstrap. We ship Bootstrap in Visual Studio 2013. File new project, Bootstrap is there. You can call us if you want help with Bootstrap. I probably wouldn't do that, but you can. And at the end, it's all backed by the cloud. I'm not talking about Asher versus all the other ones. The idea is, when you talk about tooling, we can take very heavy advantage of the cloud. I was very late, personally, to the cloud game. I think it was only last summer that I started moving things over to Azure. It was only when Brady Gaster, one of my colleagues, he kind of pointed out the whole dev test aspect of it. I use the cloud as a development tool. It's just a tool in my toolbox. I do my staging, I do my deployments directly from GitHub to my staging environments and so on. I don't have to do those manual things anymore where I have to publish manually and blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. It just happens automatically. So when we talk about everything in the tooling is backed by the cloud, it's to get that experience to be super crisp. And there are a lot of benefits. And if you're already an MSDN subscriber, you can do this today for free, right? All right, demo. Any questions? Nope. All right. Oops. All right. So let's take a look at an app here. This is a fantastic website. It's not a web application. This is a website. Website, that means there's no project file. There's no CS proj. This is very simple. This is all there is. So we have a package.json file. Anyone know what package.json file is? No, it's very similar to package.config, the NuGet package file. But this is an NPM, Node Package Manager. So this is very similar to NuGet, but it's JSON and it's what Node.js uses. Okay? So here I have some dev dependencies. Just like NuGet, I have dependencies listed in the package file, and these are development dependencies. So what a lot of people are doing out there is that they are building websites, and they use other tools for the purpose of building the website, not necessarily for running it. And one of them is called Grunt. So I'm going to have a dependency here on Grunt. Grunt is the equivalent of MS Build, but running on Node. Okay? I'm going to have two tasks. Just like MS Build, you have tasks. So I'm going to have two tasks, the watch task and JS hint. JS hint is FX cup, but for JavaScript. And then finally, I have JS hint style list. That's just a way to get my error messages in my console window to look pretty. That's all it is. So I have these four packages. And now we're going to do restore packages. You know how you can do that in NuGet, right? It does that automatically. So if you're into this whole, if you're into Node and all that stuff, whoa, that was pretty heavy zoom here. You would do something like this, npm install, okay? We hit enter. And now it goes out and it gets all these four things that I specified in my package file, and it gets all the dependencies, just like NuGet. And now it's done. Whoop. And if I refresh, we now have Node modules. And if we open this guy, we can see we have exactly a one-to-one mapping with what I have right here. So now I have my packages installed. Now that allows me to do some things. If we go back here, we can now call Grunt. Oh, actually, let me just show you Grunt. I have a Grunt file. The naming convention if you have a file called gruntfile.js, looks like this. This is my MS Build file, okay? But it's a Grunt file. So it's not MS Build, but it's the equivalent. I have two tasks, JS hint and watched, and watch. So I can now run any of these tasks. So let's say I want to run fxcop or JS hint on all of my JavaScript. I'm going to say all JavaScript files in the scripts folder, run that. I would go in here, and I would say grunt JS hint. And it would give me two errors. I have on line 1 and 2, I have missing semicolons. You probably can't even tell because it's blue, right? It says missing semicolon. It's really difficult to read. But hey, that's just the command line, right? That's what people do. That's fine. The problem is, of course, that now I have to remember where those two errors were, and I have to go back into Visual Studio and find those files, right? People do this today. This is a normal workflow. So you come in and you find your file, and yeah, I forgot my semicolons. So there's a disconnect between I'm going to use these command line tools and my productivity I expect in Visual Studio with errors showing up the right places, right? So what we're trying to achieve here is to say, let's say if you use those tools, how can we make that experience better for you? So let's just delete my packages again here. I'm just getting rid of the node modules folder. What if we can just right-click package.json and says npm install packages? It just opens up in the output window. It does exactly the same thing, but I don't have to go out to the console. And now it's done. And we can go back up here, and we're back where we started. And if I want to run a specific grunt task, what if I just right-click the grunt file and say grunt run jshint? And now it does that, and it gives me the exact same error. So now we're basically just calling the console and say, hey, grunt, execute my task, my build task. Okay? But there's still a disconnect because I can't go in and double-click this guy and says, hey, take me to the right line. So you still have the disconnect. So what if we can go in and say, open PowerShell. And this is a proof of concept, okay? So it looks kind of weird. Don't worry about the Dan, the developer who built this, he calls it a ghetto prototype, okay? So it's not a real command line, but it is. It just executes the console. So here we can do the exact same thing. So what if I go in here and say grunt jshint? We're going to get the exact same output, but because we run it in Visual Studio, we can scrape the output and create error lists. Okay? I can click here and navigate to the right place. And look how you get the red squigglies to show up automatically in the JavaScript editor in this case. We're still doing the exact same thing as I did in the console, grunt jshint. But you see, there's a huge difference in what we're doing with the result here. Make sense? Yep. And of course, this is just a console, right? You can drag it over and to wherever you want, second monitor. You can even open different tabs. So you can have different PowerShells here if you want to. But this gives us this nice layer on top of tools that are very popular out there. Like one of my biggest problems is if I want to contribute to a really cool web project out there on GitHub, I clone the project down to my machine, and I'm like, I can't build it. It has grunt files. I have to do all sorts of things. That's really problematic. And it kind of stops me from contributing to stuff I really want to do or just being able to run local things. Hey, if you want to run this new Ghost blog engine out there, this thing called Ghost, well, you get it down, and then what do? You can't really run any of those things. But let's try this. Let's say that you can just right-click a grunt file, go to grunt properties, and now we can specify what do we want to do when I run. So when I hit F5, normally today we spin up IIS Express and build and all this sort of stuff, but what should happen with grunt? What grunt task, or gulp for that matter, should be executed? And we can say, oh, when you build, you should run, just run jshint. I only really have jshint right now. So let's just run those two things. We can save that. And the grunt file is now updated and has this little piece of text. And now we are binding our Visual Studio key bindings to all of this. So whenever I hit Control Shift B for building, well, it's just going to run my tasks in grunt as well. But let's say that we didn't have this and we just delete this guy. Let me just close the project here. Let's open it. So now I've downloaded a project from GitHub or wherever, and I'm just going to open it. It's immediately going to notice, hey, you have a grunt file. Do you want to enable Visual Studio to do the right things that you would expect to happen? And you can set it up here. Of course, this is the ghetto prototype, right? So these are, of course, going to be drop downs. We're going to figure out what are the tasks available and so on, if this is what it's going to look like when it's done. We don't know yet. But the point here is, bring your own tools, and if you want to, start using Visual Studio at whatever level makes you comfortable. If you like the console and you prefer the console, do that. But if you like Visual Studio to help out a little bit with some right-click menus or whatnot, you go for that. Or if you want the full experience where we actually understand what Grunt and Gulp is, you can opt for that too. Make sense? Okay. So don't be afraid of these tools because they're out there. There's more and more being said about these tools. There are a lot more on blogs and in media and all that. But we're right there alongside with them. This tool I showed here where you can right-click and say npm install packages and click the grunt file and go down and execute that, that's available today. It's called Grunt Launcher. It's an extension for Visual Studio. So you can actually get that today already. Okay. New demo. I have a website. And let's see here. Yep. So here, this is the standard website, right? Standard file new project, MVC project here. Now, we have this thing called Browser Link. Anyone here knows what Browser Link is? Okay, that's a good amount of people. So for the rest of you, Browser Link is a direct communication channel between Visual Studio and any browser. Any browser. Mobile emulators, Firefox, Chrome, IE, right? Older browsers. It's funny when you say older browsers. Everyone knows you're just talking about old versions of IE. But it works in older browsers. So it establishes a connection, bidirectional WebSocket and JavaScript standards, web standards again, connection. So Visual Studio is now a server. Visual Studio 2013 is a server. You can connect to a port directly from the browser. And that's what we're doing, and have been doing since the first release of Visual Studio 2013. But we didn't do a lot with it. So I talked to the Internet Explorer developer tools guy. He's called Andy. I said, hey, Andy, let's see if we can do some cool stuff with the tools in IE. And he said, yep, that's cool. So we came up with this. Let's say that you want to inspect an element in IE, right? So let's take this guy here, this link. Right-click and say inspect element. Now, what usually happens is that the developer tool is going to pop up, and we're going to select the DOM node. And it does, but notice what Visual Studio did. It opened this exact DOM element in the source inside Visual Studio. And of course, I can click anything else, do the same thing, and it just jumps to the right place in source. I can even go down here, kind of just scroll around using the keyboard. It's pretty cool. Boom. And fast, right? So this makes it a lot easier when you're seeing a new code base and you want to get familiarized with where does everything come from. What's really cool about this guy up here, though, and this illustrates the point really well, this is here when it's rendered. It's just a link, right? An A tag right here. But in Visual Studio, it's C#. It's an HTML action link. That's an MVC concept. It's pure C#. There is absolutely nothing here of HTML. There is no direct mapping between what's in the browser and what's in your source code. No one else can do this mapping. Chrome Developer Tools, none of the other ones can do this mapping because we actually produce the source map in Visual Studio and ASP.NET, which is really, really cool. So we can go back to the exact place in your source code. And if you have Web Essentials, we can take it a step further. We can actually go in here and go to design mode. We can click this guy, and now it becomes editable. So now I can just write in the browser. And you see what happened in the source. It just followed along, right? That's pretty cool. That's Browser Link. That's what we get there. But now we're trying to integrate with other parts of the ecosystem. IE is the first. I'm going to reach out to Chrome and Firefox to have them do the same thing. It was actually cool when they when they decided to implement this for IE, they sent me the code review. I'm a program manager. Program manager means guy who does not code. Okay? And so they sent me the code review. And I was like, ooh, this is cool. And do you know what this developer tool is in IE, what language it's written in? Who said Java? No, not Java. TypeScript. It's written in TypeScript. The entire thing is written in TypeScript. So I got 8 lines of TypeScript. That was all it took. I thought that was really cool. Just when I started at Microsoft, I was allowed to commit code to the Visual Studio code base. So the first time I did that, I printed it out. We used cruise control back then. And I have a printout in a frame. My first commit to Visual Studio, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. 2 days later, I printed another one out. That was the first time I broke Visual Studio. This time, I didn't break anything, though. But you can see the point. We can start to integrate both ways, bidirectionally now, with different tools in our tool chain. And that's really, really what we want to try to achieve here, because we don't want to change your workflow. So, I don't know. Have we seen this demo earlier this week with Chrome? Yes, this works cross-browser, even older browsers. But I'm going to up that Chrome one. Okay? So here's Chrome. Oh, here is iPhone. So let's do something else. I'm just going to go in here. Hit Control-Alt-Enter, that refreshes all of my browsers. So what if I can go in here, and let's just do this. Now we can see them all. I'm going to go into Chrome. I'm going to go into the DevTools. And in here, I can now just change something here. So I'm changing the margin, or the padding, sorry. I'm going to change it back. Notice what happens in all 4 windows. They all change. I can remote control Visual Studio and any other browser from the developer tools in any browser that I choose. If I want to debug in my iPhone, I can do that through Chrome. The iPhone emulator does not have developer tools, right? But whenever I make a change in one developer tools, they apply to all of them. So I can even sit and do my pixel pushing in IE, but I'm going to use the Chrome tools or Firebug because I prefer those tools. So that's all possible with this stuff. And of course, it works always. I can also go into VS and change stuff here. And as soon as I hit save, it updates. I'm going to hit save. It's immediate. There is no lag here. It's a socket connection streaming just the changes. Right? So that's pretty cool. So how does this work in Chrome? Is there any extensions? No, there are no extensions here. Browser Link works simply by, I'm going to show you the, it actually injects code into the bottom of your page right here. So you don't need any, you don't need any plugins at all. The only place where we need Chrome and Firefox and other browsers to play ball is when I use the native inspection mode. When I said inspect element, that part is the only thing that requires the browsers understand and will send the event that we can pick up. That's the only part. Everything else just runs through JavaScript. So anything JavaScript can do, we can send out and have JavaScript do, including the refresh scenario where we refresh all the connected browsers. We basically just send that message out, and that's basically it. Yep, this has nothing to do with debugging. You can still debug, yep. So the question was, does debugging also work? We do not have full debugging for Chrome yet. Okay? Yet. That's an important last word right there. All right. So we want to integrate with your favorite tools. We want to integrate with our own tools, IE, and all the other browsers. and give make it everything a better experience. But we also want to do, we also have this idea with server and client that I was talking to you about before, that they are better together. Like, we strongly believe that server and client are best together. So let me illustrate that. Here I have a website. Let's just run this. This is a very simple website. It's built in AngularJS and web pages, ASP.NET web pages. So let me just demonstrate what it does. It's basically a way for you to get a new name. So you type in your name and hit generate, and it gives you a new name. That is all that this app does. Now, the idea is, of course, that this is a unique name. So I should be able to Google this. Thank you, IE. And no search result comes up, right? So that's the entire app right there. Voila. It's actually, if you go to betternamegenerator.azurewebsites.net, it's right there. This is my boss, Scott Hunter. He's also a McDorkey. But the one feature that I have here that I cannot do with strictly client-side is the share on Facebook. If I just used static HTML and JavaScript, I would have an issue with this specific link. Now, let's just try that for a second. Here it says, Scott, your new unique name is. So if I say share on Facebook, it says, Scott's got a new name. Okay, it has the word Scott in there. So it's sort of personal. Now, what happens when we do this is we send a URL to Facebook as a query string parameter, and Facebook will then go back to the website, following that link that we give it, follow it back to the website, and render the page and figure out what's in there. What are the names of, you know, what's the image to present and so on. You saw we had both the image and the name Scott. If it's all client side, we cannot do that, because all this entire page is rendered in Angular. So if we look at the, if we just look at the code here, we can see we have absolutely nothing here. This is where my entire app lives, right there, in an Angular directive. Nothing is, Facebook can't find anything here. So that's problematic. So let's just jump back here. And here's how I got around that. So I actually started writing this app as a pure client-side web app, no ASP.NET at all. And I very quickly ran into issues. So what I'm doing here is I'm finding a description. That's where it says Scott got a new name. That description I get from this little function, where I basically just figure out what's the name in the query string. Okay? So that link on the website that says share on Facebook, I constructed that link through Angular, and I put a query string that said name equals Scott. So now when Facebook calls me back, it has the query string name equals Scott, and I'm just picking that up right here. And now I can say Scott's got a new name. Okay? You can't do this with strictly client-side. Well, maybe you can, but it's not going to be easy. It's definitely not going to be easy. Another reason is I started integrating with Facebook, right? So for Facebook, they used all this sort of stuff right here, OG colon. What the hell is that? Open Graph, right? Facebook is running Open Graph. So they have this sort of stuff right here. So we can say, okay, if Facebook is going to read our stuff, if people share a link to our website, we as web developers can control how that's going to be rendered on Facebook. And we use these tags. So there's a property called property. Good thinking, W3C. That's not confusing. But the property, we can set our Open Graph stuff. And of course, we have full intelligence for it here in Visual Studio. And that's where I set the description and the title. And we can see here that we actually have the description, title, description, title, title, description, title, description, title. Right? I could do all this client-side, but that would suck. Right? Here I can just reuse whatever makes sense. So there's just so many small little things where if we were to do all this stuff in pure client-side, we could, but it would be really tough. I'm not going to give you the simplest example of what I mean. Let's say I want to write a footer that should have a copyright notice, right? So you write copyright, copy, and then we do something like this, 2009 to 2014, where 2014 means this year. I could go in through JavaScript and get the p tag inside the footer and always change the where it says 2014 to be the current year. Now anyone could just change the like time zone on their computer and JavaScript runs from your own computer and then that would be changed. But I would then have to go through and do like document get element by ID, blah blah blah. And seriously, you're not gonna beat that, right? So you're going to be done faster, you're going to be more productive, and you're going to be more happy. So we strongly believe in we need to mix these things. But if you do notice, there is not a lot here that are not client-side. Okay? Even the two views that I render are actually pure HTML. So this is an HTML view. Let's just take a look at the form here. That's where you enter your name. This is all just written in HTML. And at the top, we see we have this syntax. This is the Angular templating language, the double mustache syntax. We're going to go all in and give you full Angular intelligence in this guy. We're not there yet, but we will be. Okay? So that's going to be really, really sweet. But that's all it is. And you can use Grunt and Gulp or MS Build or whatever you want to minify all this stuff to make it really easy. Or you can use Web Essentials, and that's exactly what I've done. I actually have a min file right here. So whenever I change something, let's just open the min file. It's just one line here, right? So whenever I change something, let's make this a span, hit save. It says, oh, you want to reload the min file? Yes, please. And now the min file is updated. So I can have Web Essentials help me with all this stuff. I don't have to go in and do all this complicated setup of everything or use bundling and minification, the system web optimization stuff that we ship as Microsoft. If I'm just writing a small little app, let's just tooling handle it. There's no reason, potentially, that's my view, right? I don't think for this app it would make sense to go through the hoops and doing it the right way, whatever that means. This is a perfectly fine way of doing it and super easy. So if you want to create a min file out of a HTML file, you basically just right-click it, say Web Essentials, minify HTML file. Boom. And now every time you change form.html, the min file will be updated automatically. The same works for CSS and JavaScript and so on. Okay. So we have three boxes. Getting started, get more libraries, and web hosting, right? This is all in Bootstrap. And so Bootstrap is this CSS layout framework that makes it super easy for people like me that cannot design anything even if I wanted to. But I can actually, using Bootstrap, make things that look pretty good, like decent. Decent, which is more than I can do today, so I'm really happy for that. And here's how it works. We have three columns right here. These are the three. And in Bootstrap, you have to be able to count to 12, right? So Bootstrap is dividing your page up into a grid of 12 columns in a row. So here we are saying column medium four. That's what those class names mean. And that will instruct Bootstrap to go ahead and do that. So if I change this to column two, and we go here, we see that now it's much narrower, right? So that's how Bootstrap works. So let's just create an article with two divs in it. And now I can simply just go in here and say class equals, and now I get full IntelliSense, right? So we have full IntelliSense for all CSS class names in your project. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to reference the style sheets, the CSS files themselves. This just comes in automatically. So now we can just say, I want column MD. Notice how I don't have to type the hyphen. That's really nice. Let's make this four. Oh, problem. What's wrong here? Nope, there's no row. There is no row. So what we can do here is that we can understand Bootstrap. It says Bootstrap, when using column MD4, you must also specify the class row on a parent element. So now we're actually going to take tooling to understand specific frameworks, in this case, Bootstrap, right? So let's do row. Here we go. And it's a prototype. Come on. Now it disappears. All right. So we can actually optimize this pretty well. We can go in here and say class call MD9. And the problem now is, yes, 13. I didn't count to 12. So now it says sum of columns must not exceed 12. This is the stuff that where you sit and pull out your hair for 2 hours because you forgot the row class or you forgot some of these other things. This has happened to me. I'm sure if it hasn't happened to you, it probably will until you learn Bootstrap. So we can make tooling very, very explicit to specific types of things. Here's one thing that I just think is funny because Hanselman had an issue with this. So if we inspect this guy, so this button right here, the blue button, it's actually just a link with a button primary class on it, and that makes it blue and all that. So let's make a button. So a ref something. Oh yeah, did you see this guy? So update 2, we now have a full file picker. That's pretty nice. Anyway, we're not going to go there. We're just going to do this. And now I want to make this a button. So we say class equals button primary. And boom. Oh no. This is the one. Hanselman actually wrote a blog post about this. And I said, that's so funny, I'm going to fix it for you. And so now, if he had Web Essentials at the time, he would have seen this error. And this error would say, when you specify button primary, you must also specify the class BTN. That's just how Bootstrap works. If you don't know, you don't know, okay? And then you're gonna pull out your hair because why doesn't it work? Damn it. So now we can just add it. Error goes away. All right. So we can actually go pretty straight to the problem of very specific things here, in this case, Bootstrap. What about Angular? So Angular would do something like this. Not like that, but like this. So in Angular, we'll say, OK, I want this div to be where all my client-side templates, like what I just showed you with the form where you get the new name and all that, all those templates, HTML templates, I want them to be inserted into this div. All right? So we do all these, we have these ng tags, and you get full intelligence of that right here. And as soon as you open it up, you can see everything. So let's say right here I want to work on an Angular controller. So I would do ng controller, let's call it teget. What's the problem? Why do I get a warning? Exactly, I forgot to declare ng app. So this guy says, the ng app attribute is missing on a parent element. Now, the only reason why I get this error is because it can walk all the way up to the HTML tag up here, right? So we cannot go further up. So that's why it knows that, hey, you don't have ng app. This is a nasty guy because I have tried to build apps in the past with Angular and for the love of God could not figure out why it didn't do anything, right? And simply because I forgot this guy. Ng app. And so when I do that, hopefully the error disappears. So we can actually come in and help you verify these things so we don't lose all our hair at the end of the day. But we can do more. Because we know, Visual Studio knows, that when you have something that's called an ng-controller, we know that that's an Angular concept. We can be very specific now. We can say, hey, if you want to build up your view first, why not just come in, use this smart tag right here, control dot, and say add new Angular controller. It's going to suggest teget because that was the name of the value. And we can just put it in our scripts folder right here, save. And now we have a scaffolded controller right here. John Papa actually wrote this guy. So we can be very specific. That's great. Whoops. So let's go back here. So Angular is the only JavaScript framework, application framework out there that uses its own internal dependency injection system that makes it completely invisible to Visual Studio what's going on. Okay? You don't get any intelligence when you're using Angular, because whatever happens inside of Angular stays inside Angular. You have to remember that Visual Studio is the only engine out there that runs all your JavaScript. It actually executed using the Chakra JavaScript engine of IE11. So it knows everything that Chakra knows. But the way that Angular is written, with its internal magic string-based dependency injection system, Chakra has no idea what's going on. So it took a little while, but we finally got through. So what we're doing in Visual Studio is that we're actually replacing the internals of Angular. Only in Visual Studio, not at runtime, right? Only the way Visual Studio looks at Angular. We're actually replacing some of the stuff. So now we can go in and we can get full intelligence for all the built-in services like location. See? But not only that, you get all the nice descriptions here too, tooltips and all that stuff. Hey. Here's my own factory here, testimonial factory. I get that too right here. And so let's just go in here, get testimonial, author, right? If I hit F12 on this guy, it actually takes me to the right place, to my file. So it knows exactly that it's not just a facade that we just do like the first level. It's the actual objects that we are now able to pass around. So that's a huge benefit. And this is all Web Essentials. This actually ships today, so we already have it in Web Essentials. And so try it out. The way it works is very, very interesting, because JavaScript, the JavaScript editor in Visual Studio, is the only editor where the intelligence, the extensibility of the intelligence, is all written in JavaScript. So if you want to add and augment intelligence, you can do that through JavaScript. Here's how it works. If we go up here, Control Q, and do Java ref, we get this nice little dialogue. And we can say, give me implicit web. Web Essentials put these two guys in here, js.comments and modern.intellisense. And you can see where they live. See users, and then whatever username you've got. Sometimes Web Essentials is not capable of registering these. I haven't figured out why. But in case you don't have these, just go in here and say add, and then navigate to your see users, username, and they're right here, okay? So these are just files, and here is one of them. So we now have stuff for Shadow DOM, Vibration API, full screen, extended canvas APIs, all this modern stuff, including the Angular I was just showing you, which is pretty complex stuff. I barely understand what's going on, but hey, it works. But here, you can contribute to this. This is all open source. Here, I'm implementing a complete specification of the W3C called HTML import. That's all I'm doing. One line is all it takes. And you can now say document.getElementById.import. It just shows up. It's that easy. So if you're interested, let's talk, because I really want to fill this up with all the cool stuff that we don't have yet. So what do we have? Well, we have a lot of things, and we now have full intelligence for WebGL, by the way, if you're interested in that. It was just released with update 2 yesterday. But there are a few things. If we want to make this function that I have right here prettier for other users that are going to use it, we're going to have to tag it up with some comments. And we have that very easily here. So you get nice completion, hit enter. You get completion, my description. We can go down here. We get IntelliSense now. We can say param. This param is a number. Number R, and this is the description. This is called JS Doc Comments. Visual Studio have, for years, have another type of comments called XML Doc Comments. You know them, that's the ones we use in C#. You've been able to use those in JavaScript as well. The problem is that sort of the rest of the world decided that JS Doc Comment is the way to go, including Angular and all of these other libraries. So if Visual Studio does not understand JS Doc Comments, we're not going to get that great experience, okay? But now if I call this function, my function, you see we get the description. It takes a number, and we get nice IntelliSense to show up here. So we actually now understand JS Doc Comments. That's a huge win. So we added another cool thing. So we already saw that we had some issues with missing semicolons in our JavaScript here earlier. This is because we're running JS Hint. JS Hint you can customize. And one way of doing that is to right-click and say, add new item, JS Hint. And we're going to say JS Hint rule file, call it whatever. It's going to be called .jshintrc. Okay? This is JS Hint rules collection, I believe it stands for. I'm not sure. But here's where we can set all the different things. So do you want to require all variables must be used? No, let's not do that. Look how I get IntelliSense here. This is a JSON file. I get IntelliSense for this guy. Okay. That's nice. So let's save this guy. Now, if we go back here, say run JS Hint, we should see the exact same thing. Right? We have the two missing semicolons. That's called ASI. So let's set this to true. Run it again. And now we're here. Right? No problems. We now did that. So the JSON editor was released yesterday. And this is not just the JSON editor. More and more stuff is going to move to JSON. So we could not just say, hey, let's just build syntax highlighting for JSON. That would have been too easy. We're actually building full JSON schema support into the JSON editor. We already have that. So that allows us to do some pretty funky stuff. Now let's take our quote mark here. The quote mark rule of JS Hint. Remember, JS Hint is our FX cop. The quote mark says, hey, do you want only to use double quotes or only single quotes, or doesn't it matter as long as it's all the same? We get full IntelliSense, as you see right here, for all of that, because we automatically assign a schema to a file called .jshintrc. We can do this with a lot of files, and we have. We've actually been sending pull requests to a lot of different open source projects out there with JSON schema files. Some of them have accepted them, some of them have done nothing yet, but hopefully they're all going to take them. And that's actually really, really cool. So, did you see, well, if you saw the announcement the other day, yesterday, about we're going to run project.json, instead of having the web config and all that, we have the project.json in the new world of ASP.NET vNext. And it looks something like this. All right, it's all just in JSON. And we have a schema for this. And you can see that the schema lives right up here. So that allows us to write JSON this way. I wanted the compilation options here. So compilation, notice how I don't have to use quotes. Compilation options, it can have these three things. I want the define, debug, done. I did not write anything. It just generates the full thing for me. So this is going to be a huge deal going forward that we now have a full-fledged JSON editor in Visual Studio. I'm very excited about that. Two other announcements that we have are that we now have updated less support. As you see right here, we have a less file. And we have a brand new SAS file, or SAS editor. So we can do SAS as well as less, all here in Update 2. Very cool stuff. So let me just recap. We want to go 100% open source, 100%, including tooling. Okay? Visual Studio is not open source, but we want to make our stuff, at least all the web stuff, we want to make all that open source. Full cross-plat support, full cloud optimized, first-class tooling, and I do mean first-class tooling, but most importantly, you are in charge, right? Whatever tools you want to use, whatever frameworks you want to use, you decide, and we support you. I want to make that absolutely clear. This is the important part. It's your happiness that's important. When you're happy, we're happy. So I want to end with a little announcement. The new version of Web Essentials coming out is going to support the free version of Visual Studio called Web Express. Yes. It's the only third-party extension that is now available for free on the free SKUs. So hopefully a lot more people that want to try out ASP.NET, that want to try our new tools and all that, they can get the start free. Maybe they run a Mac, they have Parallels, they can get all the stuff for free, and they get Web Essentials, which gives them that extra boost in the latest and greatest web technology tools. So just want to point that out. It's coming out this week. It's not there yet, but it will be out this week. So with that, thank you very much. Oh, yeah. I will be, if you have any questions, there's an Ask the Experts in 15 minutes. So if you take the down escalator to the expo hall, that's where it's going to happen. So I'll be there all night.